Are you looking for inspiring conversations about faith, film, and life? You're in the right place. Here's the host who knows the right questions to ask, Father Edward Looney.
Hey, everybody, it's Father Edward, and delighted to have another conversation today. And today I'm speaking with a priest, Father Greg Markey, and he is the author of a book about the Camino de Santiago. He's also a college chaplain, and very honored that he's joining me today. So thanks so much, Father Greg, for joining me.
Father Edward, great to be with you. Calling from Massachusetts, Northfield, Massachusetts, Thomas Aquinas College. And it's good to be talking to Wisconsin. A lot of good things in Wisconsin. We have a lot of students from Wisconsin. In fact, it's one of our largest representations is from Wisconsin.
Well, that's interesting to know. You know, we do have like this Catholic Renaissance in Wisconsin. And, you know, I think it's partly because we've had good bishops. I think it's partly because we have the shrine of Our Lady of Champion, this Marian apparition site of 1859. And so we also in the Diocese of Green Bay, we have Catholic youth expeditions that's been forming young people. And I know Madison, you know, they have Camp Gray, I think it's called. So there's lots of good Catholic things happening in the state of Wisconsin and a lot of places where formation happens. So I guess I'm not surprised to hear that fellow Wisconsinites are drawn to a strong Catholic identity. And our state is, you know, principally Catholic. Like where I serve in the Diocese of Green Bay, it's uncommon. Like I currently serve in a Lutheran settlement, actually. But like where I was stationed before, it was predominantly Catholic. It was hard to find someone who wasn't Catholic. So that's another thing we have going in our favor, I think.
Are you a native of the diocese?
I am. So I grew up in, I grew up north of Green Bay. So lifelonger. So
that's great. It must be something in the water or maybe in the cheese there or something that gets everybody thinking about the Catholic faith. Yeah, we have a lot of great students here from Wisconsin.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. And so you wrote a book called Discovering the Camino de Santiago and a Priest's Journey to the Tomb of St. James. So could you give us a little history? You know, I think people hear about the Camino. They maybe know about the huge incensor, the thurible that's there in the
Cuerpo
church.
Mero.
Yeah, they've probably seen this stuff, but I don't think people maybe understand. So could you give just a brief history of the Camino de Santiago?
Sure. Yeah. It goes back to the scriptures themselves when St. James the Major, the Greater, after Pentecost was sent to the ends of the earth. At that time, the ends of the earth was the Iberian Peninsula, and he went there and ordained the first bishops, and then had struggles there. Our Lady appeared to him on a pillar in Saragossa, the city of Saragossa, and then he returned to Jerusalem after that, and he was the first of the 12 apostles to be martyred in chapter 12 of the book of Acts. And then his disciples took his body back to Spain, where it was reverenced, and it became a bit lost during the when the Muslim invasion there in southern Spain in the 700s, and then about 100 years later, it was rediscovered, and at that time in the early 800s, immediately pilgrims started coming first from Spain and then from all over Europe. And there are pilgrim routes, ancient pilgrim routes, going back to the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages then, going all the way to northwest Spain to the tomb of St. James. And really after Rome and after Jerusalem, it's the biggest pilgrimage site in the history of the church. And today there are still hundreds of thousands of pilgrims who go there either by foot or by bike or by plane and bus and train. There's a lot of different ways to get there. But I walked the traditional route of about 500 miles starting in southern France and walked that and made it by God's grace to the tomb of St. James. And
so
my book is a story about that.
When you start in France, does that take you through Lourdes? Like, I know there's like a pilgrim trail somewhere around Lourdes, but is that the one that you were on or is that a different one?
It was a different one, but you're right. There are many routes, and there is one route that goes right through Lourdes and then cuts into the Pyrenees Mountains there and ends up hooking up with what's called the Camino Francés, which is the route that I was on. I started in a little town, little village called Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, where three major pilgrimage routes join together coming in from France, and they all converge right there in that little village of Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, and then goes over the Pyrenees. And that's one of the major traditional starting points.
And why is it that people started walking to Compostela? Like, you mentioned Rome, you mentioned Jerusalem. Of course, other pilgrim routes in England were Walsingham and Canterbury. So,
Yes.
but why did people go to the tomb of St. James? Of all the apostles, why that one?
Well, it's a great question. It's a great question. I would think because miracles were happening there, prayers were being answered. When God has a way of using holy men and women in history to further draw them to the faith of Jesus Christ. And right from the beginning, people started coming. And even the king started to of in that area, and when it was discovered, started building pilgrimage routes and houses for all the pilgrims coming. And that was part of the faith then. It was pilgrims, although in the United States we don't have them, although I think in Wisconsin you have a couple. But pilgrimages in the United States is not something really we're familiar with. But in Europe, it's very much part of what it means to be Catholic. And oftentimes you'd go to confession in the history of the church, and the priest would say, for your penance, walk to Santiago de Compostela. So you could do that on your Saturday afternoon confession. You'd walk out and say, I guess I'm going to pilgrimage somewhere to do my penance. But that was part of it. It was just all part of doing penance, having prayers answered and thanksgiving. And that's the reason why I did it. I did it and I walked it because of an anniversary on my priesthood ordination, and I wanted to do it in thanksgiving for graces received and also in reparation for any failures in my ministry, and then to go just as so many other Catholics have done throughout the centuries.
Yeah, that's incredible. So, how long did it take you to do this 500 miles? Like, you must walk about 10, 20 miles a day. So, how many days was it? What's the experience of doing the Camino? And obviously, you probably had to train in advance too, is that right?
I did, and it took me 34 days. With only one day did I actually not walk at all, and that's generally about what it takes. And you're right; it's somewhere between 15 to 20 miles a day. Sometimes a little less, sometimes a little bit more. But it's about 15 to 20 miles a day, and it was 496 miles actually, but I did get lost a couple times, and I'm pretty sure that I walked at least 4 miles being lost. So I think I cleared the 500 mile mark too.
Sure. So I think you answered the questions, but did you do advanced training? Like, did
Oh, I
it
see.
was a few months of preparation beforehand?
I did. But the reality is, it's not something for which you can really train. You want to get your shoes broken in ahead of time so you don't get blisters. And I did train putting some weights in my backpack and walk for a number of miles for a couple times a week or something like that. But the difficulty or the challenge is most people can walk about 15 miles a day. You can pace yourself. You go 2 miles here, you go 2 miles there, you stop, you have something to eat, another 2 miles there. And by 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, you've walked 15 miles. It's not all that difficult for most people. The problem is, after about 3 or 4 or 5 days a week, your body suddenly says, "What are you doing? You're walking 15 or 20 miles a day for now 7 days," and all of a sudden your body starts reacting in strange ways that you can't predict, and there's no really way to train for that as to how your bodies can react. So there are a percentage of people who never make it to the end, who start it just simply because their body breaks down or something happens. So that's all part of it too. And I certainly had some health issues along the way and reactions, many blisters and things not working right, but just kept going, and God gave me the grace to keep going and finish it.
That's incredible again. So, did you walk this by yourself? Did another priest join you? What was your companionship like, I guess, on this trek?
Yeah, it's a good question. There are different ways to do the Camino if you're going to walk it. I opted to do it by myself. There are many people who do it in groups, either as pairs or a larger group. There are advantages and disadvantages to each one of those. The advantage of doing it the way I did it alone is that you meet a lot more people. And there's an instant bond that you have with the people on the route. There's people from all over the world there, and mostly from Western Europe. But you just start talking with people on long dusty roads. Why are you doing the Camino? First question you ask is, how are your feet? And then after that, you say, okay, why are you doing this? And I had a lot of great conversations with people along the way, and that's really what the book is about. Is as I wore my collar and I talked to people along the way, and I had a lot of fascinating conversations with people about what they're looking for on the Camino. And may seem as like a surprise, but I would venture to say the clear majority of the people are not Catholic who walk it today.
I've
It's
heard that.
people, yeah, it's people who are looking for something that's missing in their life. They don't know what's missing in their life, but they're looking for something. And they heard about this ancient route and they say, well, I'm going to go there and hope I discover something that's missing in my life. And some people are going through crises. They're going over, they got a death in the family, or they're overcoming drug addiction or alcohol addiction, or maybe they're at a career crossroads and they're trying to figure out how do I move on in the next stage of my life? And so my book is about conversations I was having with people, and really then starting to talk to them about the faith, and what about Jesus Christ? And a good percentage of the people there, as you can imagine too, are fallen away Catholics. Just, as they say
Sure.
in Spanish, "Yo soy católico, pero no practicante." I'm Catholic, but I'm not practicing.
Sure.
And that was a regular conversation about. Some people, got some edgy reasons about why they're not practicing, and they want to tell a priest why I'm not Catholic and why I reject the Catholic faith or something like that. And so, okay, and I wrote all that down in my replies and the conversations. And the book is this is the second printing of the book, and I think it's been popular because of those conversations. There's many, many conversations with people in mainstream society today who do not know the Lord, and they're confused, and me doing the best I can in my own limited way to try to introduce them back to the faith. And always at the end of my conversations, I had a pocket full of miraculous medals, and I'd always take out a miraculous medal and I'd give them the miraculous medal and tell them about this is the mother of Jesus, and turn to her and see if she can help you on this. She will. So
Of all the people that you met on the journey, and you write about a lot of them in your book, who's one that stands out to you the most, or one that you've thought about? I'll share two maybe little anecdotes. The first is, so I've been to Lourdes a number of times, like six, seven times. I've been there as an auxiliary confessor, and so I would meet people as I'm working at the shrine. And essentially, one time there was this individual who came, and kind of she was religious, but she told me that, I'm walking the she was gonna walk the Camino, or she did walk the Camino, in order to let go of things of her past life. She was going through a divorce, and she was just on this path of self-discovery. Sometimes I think about that woman and where she's at in life. And then, there's another person from my experience in Lourdes that, or actually maybe two others that come to mind. One was a thief that I met and had dinner with, which is an interesting story in and of itself. Like, we sat down for dinner. I saw this couple, and just want to talk with them and see what they were about and why they were in Lourdes. And turns out they were probably there to steal things. So that was a,
Did they tell this over the dinner table?
yeah, they did. They did. And they wanted to pay for the meal. And so I said, no, I think I should pay for the meal, because you want to know who was paying for it otherwise, or if it was paid even. So there's that person. Then there was just another person that I had a very strong conversation about faith with, and you know, I wrote down their name, I prayed for them every now and again. So is there someone like that from your experience of the Camino, like that you encountered them and now you've prayed for them, maybe you think of them and how God is working in their life right now?
Yeah, of course. And the book is filled with people like that. One of the ones that I thought was the most impressive was a couple from Canada that were walking it, and a lovely couple. We hit it off right away. And the way the Camino works is you meet people and then you separate. And then a day or two later, you see them again and you walk again and you pick up conversations with them along the way. And this couple from Canada, we got along real well, and they were romantic relationship, and they were both married and divorced, and they had kids, and they were now on their second union, and a lovely couple, both Catholic but not really practicing, but they both appreciated the fact that I was a priest, and they liked talking with a priest, and I liked talking with them too. And after a number of days, we really got to be very comfortable with one another and honest and open. And I could see they had a goodness in them. And over dinner one night, they each told me the very painful story of their divorces and what happened. And like so many of these divorces, it's heartbreaking, and especially when you have children involved. And they met each other and they began to start a new life together, and they were living together, and they decided to do the Camino together as a way of forming that bond now, and they're trying to do things right, and things went wrong and the first marriages and things like that. And then we got so confident and comfortable with one another, I finally put the question to them and asked them, is this God's will that you live together in a second union? God has a plan for each of you, but to live in sin is not part of God's will. And this situation really, to do God's will, this situation has to be addressed. And to their credit, it was a much longer conversation this, but to their credit, they heard me and they accepted it. And we finished the conversation on very good terms. And they understood why I was saying what I was saying. Well, I didn't see him for another 2 or 3 weeks. We lost contact, and it ended up when I arrived at the Camino at Santiago de Compostela, I ran into the young lady from Canada, and she was lovely. And it's one of the great joys of the Camino de Santiago is when you arrive at the city, the destination, just bumping into pilgrims that you had walked with along the way, and happy that they had made it, happy that you made it, and you compare stories. And this young lady, I walked in, and she immediately pulled out her miraculous medal, and she said, "See, Father, I've got my miraculous medal still." So she told me some stories about things that happened to her. And then finally I said, "Well, what happened to the other gentleman?" And she said, "You know, Father, we talked about what you told us, what you said to us. And we both decided that really we need to make our lives right with God. And we decided to finish the Camino separately and to separate. And we're going to go back and try to get our lives together without one another and try to first get our lives right with God and then build our lives." And she says, "Well, I don't know where he is now."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So to me, that was one of the great victories that each of them had said, you know, we want to get our lives right with God first before we build our lives further. And it's to their credit. They were both people of goodwill who only wanted to do the right thing, who had suffered quite a bit in their lives. And I think they both were rediscovering their Catholic faith along the Camino.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, I wonder if they'll ever reach out to you again. But yeah, that is a beautiful story of God's grace at work in the Camino. I really liked how you described like arriving on Compostela, seeing the pilgrims that you had walked with. You know, that's kind of pilgrimage is supposed to be an image of our destiny to the king, or our pilgrimage, our journey to the kingdom of heaven. And so that's kind of what we hope when we get to heaven. Like, here's everybody that we journeyed with on earth, and that we hope that they've attained their heavenly reward. And so just as you're walking around Compostela, it's kind of like a prefiguring, foreshadowing of that, I think. But
absolutely.
You arrive in Compostela. What's the first thing you do? You go to the church, you pray at the tomb. What's that ex Was that your first time there? What's your experience like as the pilgrimage comes to an end?
Yeah, you arrive there, and when you come over a hill coming towards the city, and you can see the steeples of the cathedral there from a distance, and that gives you great hope and great joy. Like they're just coming to the end of my pilgrimage. And as you say, it's a metaphor for life, that very much our lives are pilgrimage to the Father's house. Remember when John Paul II was dying, that was one of, he was heard to say those words right before, "Let me go to my Father's house." And that's what the pilgrimage is like. So you arrive there, it's a great moment of exhilaration. I compared it to, I only thing I could compare it to was, like, I remember being a kid on Christmas morning and running downstairs to open presents that were left under the Christmas tree. Just that joy, that innocent joy that you have as a child. And then you go to the square, the plaza in front of the cathedral, and there, this huge plaza. And we came in, I came in with, I ended up walking in the end with some college students. And we came to the center, and they knew the Salve Regina, so we sang the Salve Regina together, and then entered into the cathedral and prayed at his tomb. And I planned it that I would arrive the day before, or a day or two before, the feast day of St. James, July 25th. So I arrived a day or two in advance and was able then to celebrate the feast day that year of St. James the Apostle. Along with many other pilgrims. So it was a joyous occasion, and I'm very grateful to God that I was able to complete it through many challenges.
So you've done the Camino de Santiago. Is there any anticipation of maybe not doing it in its entirety again, but doing one of the shorter legs, maybe taking some of the college students you're with at the college? Do you ever think it'll be something you do again?
Yes, I think about it. I think about doing different routes. There are, for example, there's a great route that goes along the northern coast of Spain through Asturias, that you have the ocean on your right to the north, and that looks like an exciting route to take. There's also a route that starts in Portugal from the south. I've thought about doing those routes and shorter routes. I would also get better shoes. I don't think I had the right shoes when I was doing it. So if I do it, I think that would be something different. I would get better shoes. Yeah, I mean, in certain ways though too, I've done it once. There was a certain mystique to it, and I don't know if I want to redo that, or change that. I have such a good memory of it, so I'm not sure if I ever will do it again. I have a lot of great memories, and I'm always happy to talk to people. And you have a bond, an instant bond with people who have done it, because everybody has their own personal experience and journey on it.
Beside getting different shoes, I have a friend, a priest friend that I went to seminary with all 6 years. He's doing the Camino later this year. What advice would you give to him or to anybody else that's going to be doing the Camino? What's one piece of advice that they should have?
Don't think you're in control. God is in control. You quickly learn that. The certain things go wrong, it's inevitable, and but God always catches you. That would be one thing, is to just to be ready to let go, because God will show you some amazing interventions. Secondly, pack light. And if you don't pack light, you will learn very quickly that you must pack light, and you will throw things away to go as light as possible. If I were to do it again at the same distance, is your friend doing it? How long is he going to do? Do you know?
I think he's doing like 14 days. So, or I don't think he's doing like the full 30-day hike. So it must be some abbreviated form.
Yeah, okay. And that's great. There's a lot of different ways to approach it. Everybody has their own way of approaching it. Yeah, maybe the last bit of advice I would give him is, as a priest, I would say wear your collar and be ready to evangelize. there are many, it's fertile territory there. And this is a theme that keeps coming up again for all of us priests and anybody who's paying attention, that we are no longer living in Christendom. And it's an apostolic age again. And sure. And Catholicism is just one more idea in the marketplace of ideas out there. And the world needs to be evangelized. It's a challenge, I'm sure, as this priest knows, to bring the gospel to a culture that has many ways said, been there and done that, and I've already considered that, and I'm not going to do that. But we need to try to some way reintroduce people to the faith in a dynamic way. So I would say, as a priest, bring up, as I did, a very easy way is just bring a pocket full of miraculous medals. I brought 50 with me. And no matter what person I gave it to, whether they were strident in their anti-Catholic view or why they're not practicing the faith, it seems that every person I gave it to, when I take it out and they say, this is the mother of Jesus, she promises that if you wear this, you will receive graces and protections. Every person, I received a warm reception from it, and they said, oh, thank you very much. They're clearly touched. And that's part of what I write about in the book, is the various reactions to the miraculous medal that I give. So I would encourage them to do that as a minimum of way of evangelizing as you go.
Well, Father Greg Markey, it's been great to talk about your own experience of the Camino de Santiago, which you recount in your book, Discovering the Camino de Santiago, available from Sophia Institute Press. So if someone is going on the pilgrimage or someone can't do it, maybe they can just tag along through your journey, through your stories, and kind of live that experience. But I'm sure that as they read Discovering the Camino de Santiago, they'll see how God changed your heart and changed your life, even as a priest, from Absolutely. Making this very arduous pilgrimage. So thanks so much for sharing the book and sharing your experiences. I know that lots of people will take inspiration from it for sure.
Thank you so much for having me, and I enjoyed talking to you about it, and God bless you in your ministry.
If you liked today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you're listening. And don't forget to stay up to date with what Father Edward is doing by following him on Facebook, X, or Instagram at the handle at FR Looney. Thanks for listening, and please join Father Edward again next time for another inspiring conversation.